Morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Broker Breakdown with myself and James. We are now on episode 12, which is fantastic, James. We've made it 12 so far.
Yeah, no, any episode that we're doing is obviously great, and people listening in. So we're just happy to make it this far, and again, just continuing adding knowledge to people that, you know what, people just don't think about before. Again, insurance can be a very dry topic to talk about, but again, if we're just kind of spreading as much knowledge as we possibly can, and you come away from our conversations knowing a little bit more than you did prior, then we're doing our jobs properly.
Exactly. And maybe we can help people not become as complacent with their policies, which is something that the average listener might do every year.
Yeah, like anyone that I usually talk to, like, they don't really, I'm the one that usually explains it to them. And then again, they're coming out of our conversation a lot more knowledgeable, right? But again, if you don't have a broker like myself or Mike, where we actually go over things very, very in depth, and they just kind of go, oh, well, here's your policy, this is how much you pay for it every year, you're not really getting much value out of that, right? And then at the end of the day, like, if you need to actually use the insurance and you don't have coverage for something that you wanted, then yeah, it's kind of, why am I paying for this for no reason then? And I don't have the coverage I want.
Exactly, which is a great segue into this week's topic, everyone. We've had a couple of people looking for it. Me and James, I know, have chatted about it before. It is a massive impacting factor in home and auto insurance. But we are going to chat today about the claims experience as a result to fraud in our industry, which is an ever growing talking point or pain point, I should say, for consumers.
Yes. Consumers don't realize how much of an impact fraud actually has in insurance from every standpoint, not only from like a rating standpoint, like how we get our premiums every year, from a claim standpoint, like if claims are going to get paid out if they find that there might be potential fraud in an event of a claim. So there, fraud is such a big standpoint in insurance. And a lot of people always are like, well, I'm not the one committing fraud. Well, yeah, but the thing with insurance is that insurance is almost like our healthcare system. Like, everyone pays into it. Everyone, either you use it or you don't use it. That's kind of how it is. And again, if your neighbor down the street is committing fraud, unfortunately, you're probably going to have to be paying for that person on top of that. Give in mind that the person that's actually committing fraud is probably going to be paying a lot more than what you're paying, but still, like, that trickles down to almost every consumer.
It big time does, yeah. And as an average driver, a lot of people don't understand kind of what goes into that too, or kind of how a fraud affects everything from claims payouts to you know, that general pool of money that the insurance companies have, and then how that directly correlates back to us as other consumers that don't commit it, and you know, how our rates increase or decrease, right? So big talking point. We wanted to get into that today and chat about a number of different examples about how fraud is committed, what you can obviously do to hopefully not be part of that, because there are some people that are unfortunately part of that that don't even aren't aware of it, and kind of everything relating to that. So I guess the first thing that I wanted to chat about, James, then we'll kind of go and dig a little deeper into this. I know the big thing that relates to auto insurance that people should be aware of is the entire claims experience from start to finish for those people that are involved in a car accident. When their vehicle, and I'll specify more the GTA, just because obviously it's a massive area, lots of people in it. But when claims happen, tow truck drivers obviously come to the scene, they take your vehicle away. And kind of what's the next steps there?
Yeah, so I think what you're kind of trying to touch point on is like what we call, or what is being called, as like the staged collisions, where basically like if it's a fender bender, and then either you're working with the tow truck driver, or you're working with the collision shop, and then basically they're either like writing off that the vehicle was damaged more, or they're actually, there's even possibilities that they could even damage the vehicle more. They bring it to the back of the shop and they just smash it up more. And they're like, oh, look at this. It's damaged way more than we expected it to be. But yeah, just making sure that you're not being involved in any like stage collisions, because again, like that is a huge thing. I don't know if anyone's heard recently about the whole the whole turf wars that they like to call it for like tow truck drivers, especially in GTA. There's even been like shootings and stuff based on that because the tow truck industry is becoming so competitive.
Yeah, I remember there was a marketplace thing done, I think, by Aviva a number of years ago now, from what I can recall. I watched it, and I remember specifically there was a few things that stuck out to me, one of which was that there was multiple tow trucks, obviously, that, you know, their job is to wait for when accidents happen and then go out to scenes, but it was so competitive that you had there was bylaws in place about how close a tow truck could be if another alternative one was already there, right? So they're hooking up or they're nearby, but you know, two or three others would come immediately, you know, and be within like, you know, maybe let's say, I don't even know, 100 feet or 50 feet of that vehicle, right? And they would kind of talk about how, you know, they would go up to the scene and say, hey, you know, I'll bring you to this specialized shop, and kind of entice the person in almost an aggressive manner to say, let's go here. You know, we can help you with a rental. We can help you out with certain, you know, a certain shop to get your vehicle repaired. And that's where the whole process started, right? Because obviously a lot of these...
almost like clotheslining you into like taking their option, right? Like over someone else.
Right. And so for the average person that doesn't know how their insurance policy works or doesn't know, you know, even the legal side of it too, you're now in a certainly an uncomfortable position after an accident happened, which already probably makes, you know, 9 out of 10 people very uneasy about what the next steps are, what they should do, who they should call. You know, they're already vulnerable and not knowing. So of course, if someone says, yeah, I'll bring you here, I'll get you a rental, I'll get your vehicle repaired, it sounds pretty sweet.
Oh yeah. Like moment. Great. You're doing all the work for me, right? Like I literally don't have to do anything.
Right.
Awesome.
Right. So, I mean, I guess one of the tips that I would tell all people is one, you know, obviously it's tough in the moment, but try to keep your wits about you with respect to like who you're using. Right. And the other thing that you can do to help the process along is if it's on the highway and, you know, between police and tow trucks, they say, get it off the road ASAP. I know that's something that I think is talked about, or at least what I've heard, is maybe try to bring it to a specialized shop that maybe your insurance company uses, right? All insurance companies have their certain, I forget what the term is, James, but they have their preferred body shops.
Preferred, yes.
Right,
yes.
Right. So either A, knowing that ahead of time, which most people won't know, or B, maybe having it brought to a specific area, like even your mechanic, if you know, having it dropped off there, and then when you're in touch with your insurance company, finding out what their preferred shop is would be the best idea. Because if you don't know where that is, if you bring it to the tow truck's impound yard or something they recommend, and it's there for a couple of days, you could be on the hook for, at that point, up to, I don't even know, it could be $1,000 for a couple of days, depending like on who hooks you up.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. I've seen it happen to people. I've heard the horror stories for sure.
Before I comment on that, a stat that came out in 2019 shows that in the insurance industry, fraud alone costs the insurance industry $1.6 billion a year.
So right.
Just keep that in mind of how much fraud actually costs an industry when we're thinking about all this. And again, why rates might continue to increase is based off that number. So, but yeah, going back to what you were just saying there, yes, a lot of insurance companies will have preferred shops. Again, you do not have to use those preferred shops, but they're there because the insurance company trusts them to do the work that is going to be to get your vehicle back to where it was prior. If you do trust someone and you've gone to a mechanic shop, like I go, there's a shop in Brampton that I go. Again, I live a little bit farther away from Brampton, but again, I trust these guys with my life. CSN Colex, there's the plug for them in Brampton. But I go to them for literally everything. My whole family goes to them. Again, it might be a little bit farther from where I live, but again, I trust them with my business and that they're going to fix my vehicle the way I want it to be fixed. So you have two options. Like I said, you can go to the preferred shop that the insurance company would like you to go to. There's even some insurance companies now that actually they have in-house repairs. I know TD Insurance now, they have like a whole thing where like they literally like from start to finish, it stays in one building. So like the insurance brokers are in one area. And then they have like the shops in the back. Have you seen those recently?
I've heard about it, but I don't know further. I don't know too many more details on it.
Yeah, I just know because I had a family member that got into an accident and was with TD. But so they have like basically it's all in one building. So like the broker, the claims adjuster, and like the whole mechanics are all in one building now. So it's all like together. So I guess there's three ways of doing it. So you have the preferred, you have the in-house, then you also, again, if you have someone you trust, you can go to them. But again, I know it's a very difficult thing to say, like, oh, like really keep like your head level during like a time of a claim, but like really make sure that you're using your fair judgment on things. And if things just don't make sense, like if there's just red flags all over certain things, it might not be the best thing to go to that shop if there's a red flag, or use that tow truck driver if there's a red flag that you're just not you're kind of feeling a little bit uneasy about.
Yeah, I feel like one of the immediate things to pick up on would be if a guy comes to the scene immediately and says, listen, I'm going to bring you to this lot, we'll keep your car there, we'll get your vehicle repaired. It all is if it sounds too good to be true, like the saying goes, it probably is, right? It's probably not going to be the case.
Exactly.
Especially if they say we have like an in-house rental car company, because there's not too many that I'm aware of that also operate as tow truck companies. So yeah. If that's the case, they're doing everything themselves as a full service. I would think there's stuff behind the scenes happening there. That's just an opinion. But yeah, that's one thing, right? Is how that works out with the fraud thing. The other side of it too, on that same point, is the injury side, which is very unfortunate. And I want to start by saying, you know, anyone that has injuries, obviously from a car accident, it impacts your life, right? Whether they're minor or major. And I think that, you know, if you do require certain maybe accident benefits to get back to the place you were before, I understand, you know, wanting to use those. There is the side of fraud with which is a talking point, James, because especially this is, I think, where a lot of it is paid out, where people will utilize specific industry professionals that maybe aren't accredited and or are fully increasing, you know, what those charges are for services performed, right? Whether it's rehab or physio, or we've heard, you know, that there's a lot of people out there doing that kind of stuff.
Oh, 100%. Like, and again, look, going back to this number, $1.6 billion a year, we cannot think that $1.6 billion is just purely based on accidents and repairing vehicles. If you, again, we deal with this on a daily basis. So me and Mike have a little bit more insight on this, but a lot, when it comes to like the massive, massive accidents, yes. If I have to write off a $50,000 car, that's $50,000. But again, if it's a massive accident like that, you're probably looking at a massive accident benefit claim, which again, that can go up into like, I've seen accident benefit claims in the millions of dollars. Again, like for all the rehabilitation, all the income replacement that you have to use during that time to get back to where you were prior to the claim. But again, like there are times where either the insured goes, oh, you know what? Like my back's hurting and it hurts for the next 5 years. And again, the rehabilitation coverage is being used for that next 5 years. Again, like Mike was saying, there's also, unfortunately, people that professionals that will basically mark down that there's been more injuries to a person than there actually were. So then the insurance company gets that from what is supposed to be a professional. I'm using air quotes, professional. And then they get that. And then obviously the insurance company is like, you know what? We trust this person. And then they have to pay out massive amounts of money because the professional is basically saying, Johnny over here has this, this, and this wrong with them. But realistically, he only has one of those things wrong with them. So like they could have minimized how much they were actually going to pay out.
Yeah. And there's no way that we're going to know that from our side as brokers, just for all the viewers to kind of know. But I will tell you that, you know, when you do see, you know, larger accident benefits claims, it's going to get to a point in our industry where there's going to be that, you know, were they real? Were they fake? That kind of stuff will come into the conversation down the road for sure, whether it's 5 or 10 years from now or next year, who really knows, right? But that's a big portion of the fraud thing, right? Is these people that, you know, get involved in car accidents consistently, you know, are they staged or do they happen? If they happen, unfortunately, all the time, I mean, maybe the driving habits too, right? There's a lot that goes into that as well.
Yeah. And again, like we don't want to sit here and bash people that get into car accidents and they have to use these kind of coverages. But again, use them to your, like, use them to what you need to use them for. Like, don't go and try to like get more money out of it and use insurance as a way to make money off it. Insurance is supposed to be there to put you back to exactly where you were prior to a claim, not above and not below, exactly where you were. So again, I know there's onus on both the consumer and on the professional. If it's the professional, there's really not much you can do, because if they want to lie about it, then unfortunately we're trusting them, their license, they're accredited, whatever it might be. But again, from a consumer standpoint, if you're basically just saying like, oh, my back's hurting or whatever it is, and you're just getting money paid out, then that's again on the onus of the consumer that is just basically saying that you're injured, but you're really not.
Well, and the big thing about that is how it affects the rest of the pool, right? So exactly. Insurance is, yep, it's a giant pool among all of us that pay into it. I mean, combating the fraud aspect is the biggest part of this conversation, right? Because those that do need serious rehab and physio, I think they should take every dollar required in order to get 100%. Back to where they're at, because that's why we all pay.
100%. And
hopefully we never have to go through that, because nobody... If you chat with anyone that's been through a really large claim, it affects their life way more than it should have. So the point being, if we can narrow down or maybe have a better understanding is what I want to say about the fact that fraud does play a big part of what the insurance companies charge behind the scenes for premiums, then as a general idea, we'll have a better idea, right? The losses of the few that are committing that are obviously going to wreck it for other people. Unfortunately, that's just how our industry is and probably will remain until there's more ways of being able to identify that.
Yeah, fraud is exactly like claims. If there's more claims in a certain area, unfortunately, even if you're not getting into those claims, your rate is probably going to go up a little bit to offset what those claims are doing to the industry. Again, the person that's getting into that claim is obviously going to pay more than what you're paying, but it's still going to trickle down to all the consumers in that area. And same with fraud. If more fraud's being committed in a certain area, it's going to be, there's a trickle down effect. Everyone's going to have to be, I don't want to say punished, but it really is. You're being punished for what other people are doing, right? Claims is a little bit different because I'm not going out every day and driving my car and I'm hitting Mike and I'm like, oh yeah, great, I hit Mike again. Like, I'm not hoping to get into an accident every day, but I think fraud is a little bit more of a opportunist, like it's an opportunity almost. You know what I mean, Mike?
Yeah. And actually the point you just made leads us into the next thing, which I'll let you touch base on, which is not the claim side, but the policy itself has a number of different rating factors that go into, you know, what we look at and what the insurance companies look at when you're basically coming to what a price is for someone, right? And everyone's price is going to be different. There's a number of different factors. One of the large talking points that, I mean, the average person looking at their policy is aware of and also contributes to fraud is the territories and postal codes, right, James? I know this has been a massive talking point in politics in general and is an everyday talking point for us in insurance. But how does that contribute to fraud, and what can our viewers think of when it comes to that?
I think it's the biggest talking point about fraud because I think it's the easiest thing to lie about, right? Like, again, like I could live in Thunder Bay, or sorry, let's reverse that. My parents could live in Thunder Bay, but I live in Toronto, and I could just say, you know what? I live in Thunder Bay as well. And then I garage it. Like, I basically tell my insurance broker that I'm in Thunder Bay, but I'm not. I'm in Toronto, right? And again, Thunder Bay and Toronto is going to have a lot different rates. And then again, I'm just trying to find the cheapest rate I possibly can. So I'm trying to find an address that I'm going to get a cheaper rate at. Again, me and Mike see this all the time, that clients will call, they'll try to get quotes, and then it's like they give one address and then they give another address and they give another address and like instantly red flags everywhere, right? And I'm just like, well, why are you like where are all these like addresses coming from? So I think the garaging aspect is such a key to this. It's the easiest thing to basically lie though on your insurance. And again, a lot of people try to do it because again, they're just looking for the cheapest rate possible. And they know, well, I live in Toronto or I live in Brampton, Scarborough, some of the highest rated areas in Ontario. But if I give a different postal code or if I give a different address, it's going to pull up a different rate and probably cheaper. So I'm going to try to do that so I can pay less on insurance.
Well, and it's from a community perspective, and I guess not for us, but from the average consumer listening, it's a talking point that unfortunately everyone has, right? You talk to your neighbors, you talk to your friends, you talk to your parents, and there's lots of examples, right? You're going to school, your parents live out in a rural property somewhere, let's just say down in Niagara, you're attending school in Toronto, you know, you get a quote for the parents, you get a quote for the kid, and you know, it's, let's just say arguably it's going to be double what it is, right? From a perspective, it's very easy to say, oh, the kid doesn't have the vehicle there. You know, it's down here, right? It's back in Niagara, even though they're there full time. And the problem is those type of examples, when they happen and people kind of get away with them in a sense, they're not as an industry, they're not talked about enough. When you're talking to your other friends, your neighbors, whoever, this sort of insight gets around so much where no one really understands the repercussions of doing so, but it becomes easy, James, right? Like a lot of people just say, oh, I'm living here instead of there, not understanding that if and when a claim happens, you know, what are the impacts? How does that, what, you know, yes, I'm saving myself $11, $12, $13, $1,500, $2,000 a year, but what's going to happen when that claim happens?
Exactly. Like the garaging location is the, one of the easiest things insurance companies pick up on in event of a claim. If you're being rated, let's use easy locations. Let's say I'm going to school in Niagara, but I'm my insurance is in Toronto, and they're like, well, why are you, were you in Niagara? Well, I go to school. Well, they're going to be like, well, why didn't you tell us about that? So I, from both perspectives, the garaging location is one, the easiest thing to lie about, but it's also the easiest thing that insurance companies will pick up instantly about if there's a claim. Because if it doesn't make sense to them, then they're going to be like, they're going to investigate and be like, okay, well, why were you here? Like, why, it doesn't make sense why you would be out here unless you're living out here and there's another address you're actually living at. So,
yeah. And I, you know what, part of the episode I wanted to touch base on, because it's obviously in this fraud topic, is that I think the general viewer and listener needs to understand that the repercussions or the potential repercussions of committing postal code fraud affect all of us first and foremost, because all of us, if you're not paying what you should be for a specific area you live, that affects the rest of the industry because we're all going to pick up on that the following years as the insurance companies do stuff. That's just how it is. That's how it's going to remain until that's either changed or until we have find another way to combat it. Two, there's two big things that can happen if a claim happens. So let's use the Niagara to Toronto example again, just because that's what we're chatting about. If you actually live and your vehicle is garaged in Toronto, but you're using maybe a parent's address in Niagara and you're involved in an accident, there's going to be a lot of conversation about whether or not, you know, were you committing basically fraud in this case? If you are, there's two things. There's one, your policy could be canceled for something we call misrepresentation. So the insurance company could say you misrepresented where you were living on purpose in order to get a lower rate. And now we've found the fact that this is the case. You did it knowingly, I guess would be part of what the insurance company would look at.
Yeah, you had to have like a, you actually had to know that you were doing it.
Yeah, like you, it wasn't a mistake. You clearly, you live, you know, here. You probably got quotes, blah, blah, blah. Either it's canceled for misrepresentation, or that's a potential outcome, or if a claim does happen and it's obviously known that this was being done, the insurance company could also deny the claim, right? As a worst case example. Now, we're not adjusters. So again, me and James really can't comment on what would happen because every claims example is a, you know, a specific experience to how that happens. But what we can say is they have those two opportunities to do. They may pay the claim out and say, guys, moving forward, you have to update your address to this location, which I certainly have seen. But I guess the important thing to note is that these other two examples can and could happen. So it's not something to take lightly. A policy being canceled for misrepresentation is a massive mark on your insurance. You might only be able to get one with one or two insurance companies, and the price is going to be through the roof. It's a black market now on your basically insurance history for a number of years.
Oh yeah, you're red flagged at that point. You're flagged. You're going to be flagged for even forever. Like, you look at the reports and I go, it doesn't matter how long ago it is. I look at it and I go, oh, this person misrep themselves. Again, I don't really, in my time of insurance, I've maybe seen one or two, but right. I look at them and I go, well, why do I want you as a client, right? Like, you've lied in the past about something and you were canceled and you were caught lying about it. So why would I want you as a client, right?
Well, and like you just made mention, because it happens maybe a little bit less than what we'd expect to see, right? You obviously, the insurance company has to make a very valid reason as to why that's being done. But if it's been done, there's obviously a reason why, right? They're not just paying out. They're not telling you to change. It wasn't an error. It was clearly an attempt at deceiving the company. If it's been canceled for that, that's a big thing, right? So it can't be, I guess the point is we shouldn't be taking this lightly. I don't think clients and viewers should be taking it lightly. If it's going to cost you 2,000 Niagara and 4,000 in Toronto, guys, you're living in a big city. That is what it is. You have to pay that when you're there. And if you're involved in a claim, I would hate for anybody to be denied if there's like a lawsuit and say, you clearly were living here. You did this purposely. You know, it's the potential, right? It's the potential.
Exactly. And I think piggybacking on what you were saying too, is that when your insurance policy is canceled for this, the long-term repercussions is that you're going to be paying higher premiums. Because again, I look at the reports and I go, you've been canceled for misrep. I have to rate that now on your insurance. And then long-term, your insurance increases. Another factor into that is that you could even be possibly denied insurance moving forward in the future, because companies straight up will just say, we can't accept you. Like, in our underwriting guidelines, we are not allowed to accept people that have misrep cancellations. So again, your options for insurance in Ontario are now dwindling down to maybe the few high-risk insurance companies, and even possibility going to Facility, the last possible place for you to go to in Ontario for auto insurance. And then going to the absolute maximum penalty that you could possibly have, there's even fines, there's even jail time that could even, depending on how bad the conviction is, like how bad the misrep is, like you could be convicted and fined and even imprisoned for committing auto insurance fraud. So
I guess depending on what type of claim happens.
Again, it would have to be so severe to get to that point, but it's still a risk. Like, you're taking a risk by doing this. You're just not telling the truth about what's going on. So again, if you're not going to tell the truth, I would hope that you know what the risks are. So that you can, you know what, maybe make a better educated decision. I don't want to do this. You know what I mean? Like, for me to save $500 a year, is this really worth me getting canceled, me having to pay higher premiums the next 3 to 6 years? Could I have to pay a fine? Could I go to prison for this, depending on how bad it is? Like, those are all things I would think of as a consumer before I was to commit auto insurance fraud. But again, I think some people are just so, they just don't think of those risks in the time that they're doing it, and they kind of brush it off as like, oh, you know, like, I'll just do this, like, I'm never gonna get caught. But again, if you do, here are the penalties that you're gonna be facing if you do get caught.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, right? Is that until you know what the potential outcomes are, whether they're good or bad, until you know those things, you're not really understanding what's gonna happen until it does, right? Just like a lot of things in insurance, until you actually realize you have to use something or realize that it does have an impact, right? Which is part of the reason why we did this podcast in the first place, was to shed some light on topics that don't always get discussed.
Yeah, the whole terminology that we always talk about, the reactive and not being proactive.
The other thing too, from the claim side on that, and again, this is why, so if you should be paying again, for a number's sake, let's just say 4,000 in Toronto, it's 2,000 in Niagara. And again, that's just an example. Everyone's rate is obviously different based on their car, driving habits, where they live. But just for conversation, if you're involved in the claim, again, using that example, and you should have been paying 4,000, so what happens is the insurance company is not collecting the premium they need to cover the risk in that city, okay? So they're not covering enough to pay for what your driving exposures are in Toronto. If the claim happens, the insurance companies review that, you know, I don't even know, it's probably daily, James, but some of the larger ones, right? But if they're looking at the end of a year and they say, we had this many claims in Toronto, this many were not properly, you know, covered based on their postal code, all that, you know, is basically not covering the pool enough. The rate in Toronto then goes up as a result because there wasn't enough money to cover for the drivers in that territory, right? So as a result, again, we're all getting penalized as a result of not everyone kind of taking their share, right? So it's, you know, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes sort of thing.
Yeah, and I know everyone's going to kind of, everyone always talks about the whole, oh, well, my insurance always goes up, it's always increasing. But these are things that we can do as like a society to make sure these things don't increase. If we just didn't commit insurance fraud, we wouldn't see these increases over and over and over again. Because again, I know everyone's going to be like, oh, well, insurance companies always are so profitable. They make so much money. Yes. But at the same time, they have to cover their own risk, right? Like they're losing, again, from 2019, they are losing $1.6 billion a year as an industry because of insurance fraud. So if that was even just cut down to half, I'm not saying we can ever get rid of insurance fraud, because there's always going to be those opportunists that take the opportunity, if given, to save a little bit of money. But even if you cut that in half, you will see rates decrease so much because they're not having to pay out all these fraudulent claims and fraudulent insurance things that go on all the time. So if we just kind of as a community came together and just, you know what, we're not going to do this. Like we're just going to be honest. Again, I'm not saying that we can fully eliminate it, because I don't think that's a realistic idea. Because again, you're always going to have those people that are going to be like, you know what, I'm going to take advantage of this. I'm going to take advantage of the system. And that's just how they operate. But even if you can cut it, even if you can cut it in half, you will see rates decrease a lot because they don't have to deal with the repercussions and how much they have to pay out for fraudulent claims.
Well, it's interesting what you said too. You know, everyone wants to cut their insurance because you're not really getting anything, right? It's, you're basically buying a promise. So it's like your life insurance, it's your home and auto insurance. It's these things that people, you actually don't get anything for the monthly premium, right? So yeah, as a consumer, we don't see it. It's funny though, when you said that, saying, oh, we got to cut costs somewhere. But yet all of us pay, you know, the exorbitant $100 a month for our cell phone because we use that every day. Or if that goes up, we all pay it continuously, even if we squawk. Or, you know, our cable bills, for example, or heating. I mean, there's just certain things that don't have the same.
I find insurance is just like one of those things that everyone just squawks at, regardless if it goes. I've had people squawk at 25 cents a month, and I'm just like, really? But like, yeah, if your phone bill goes up, or like you were saying, this whole new thing that you can now insure your cell phone so that you can buy like plans. So like if anything happens to your phone, it's like Apple Care
for iPhones. Yeah, right.
But like, it's so funny that people will buy into like this Apple Care or like their phone insurance, but then they won't, like if insurance goes up on their car or their home, they're like, well, why? A phone costs like what, $500, $1,000, but their car or home costs hundreds of thousands. So insurance, I think, is just that industry that everyone just squawks at regardless of like if it goes up or down. Like, oh, if it went down, it should have went down more. And if it went up, well, why did it go up? Why did it not go down? Right. I find there's a lot of like myths to it too. Like, oh, if I hit 25, my insurance goes down. And it's like, well, where did you hear that? Like from in 1950? Like, let's just, again, like obviously the older you get, the more chance your insurance is going to go down. But the older you get and the more claims and tickets you have, of course your insurance is going to go up. It's not going to go down.
Always been a talking point, always will be, right? I think it's just the industry we're in, right? That's going to continue to have that kind of bad rep, that It just is what it is. No one likes to pay for insurance. We all need it, right? Whether you mortgage a home or you drive a car, you need it. So it's one of those kind of necessary evils that is easy to complain about.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I think the one point that I wanted to bring up too, that kind of switching topics a little bit, is the buying insurance. And this sounds so silly because I would never do this, but some people do. But buying insurance from people that aren't actually insurance brokers or agents. So like, I've seen in my time in being insurance that people will buy, they think insurance, again, I'm going to use air quotes because it's not insurance, but they'll buy insurance from someone and there's no policy. Like it's fake insurance. So like they'll get a liability slip and it's like completely fake with a completely fake like policy number. And I've seen so many times where like they get pulled over or they get into an accident. And I've even had cops call me and they go, "Hey, so-and-so says that they're insured with you. Like, here's the policy number." And I'm like, "I've never heard of this person in my life. This is not a real policy number." But again, then I hear like, "Oh, well, they bought it from like Kijiji or Facebook Marketplace." And I'm like, "Why would you ever buy insurance from Facebook Marketplace or Kijiji?" So just a point, just use your brain when you're doing this stuff. Like, don't buy insurance off of someone that you're like not too sure of. If they don't give you documents to sign or to review, or if they're asking for like full payment by e-transfer, and like there's no, like, you can't Google them. Like, again, like Google reviews are great, but again, they can be skewed a little bit. Just make sure you're doing your research before you're actually purchasing insurance, because the last thing you want is to buy insurance from someone and to find out you've been paying insurance for the last year, 5 years, and it's not even real.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it sounds like common knowledge, but I guess I shouldn't assume that in 2022. Just make sure, regardless of the price, it's from a reputable person, right? Whether it's through the broker channel, whether it's through more of the agency side, you've gone directly to the insurance company. If you're ever buying from, you know, I don't even know what a random name is, but you're buying from some company that you can't find any information on, and the guy says, "I'll give you this savings, blah blah blah." I mean, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Let's use that first and foremost.
Look for the red flags. Like, if there's red flags all over it, then I would probably not put my trust into this person. Again, if you can't Google them, if you can't find them anywhere, if they're not a reputable company, again, if you're buying from Facebook or Kijiji, that should already be the instant like, no, like, I'm not doing this.
Or if it's a random person, right? I think the other part too is just, I mean, nowadays with technology the way it is and the social media presence and a next cohort of younger purchasers there, you know, the whole idea of buying easily online is going to seem like always the right answer because it's quick, efficient. If it's cheap, it makes sense. Some of which are legitimate websites backed by real companies. I mean, I would not be surprised if in a couple of years there's a lot more cyber theft that way too, right? With just signing up for policies you're never going to get, because people are very, you know, very cunning that way. So I mean, I think just have your head on a swivel sort of thing and use people referrals, decently large, well-known companies. Anyone that's advertising is probably pretty large. If you've never heard about them before, there's probably a reason.
Yeah, like, the insurance industry has gone so far from where it was prior, where like there you have all these online companies now where like you literally can click a button and you're insured. Again, those companies, fine. But like, again, if you're going to Joe Blow Insurance and they have no website, they have like a contact number, which again, always look at that, because if the contact number is not within your area, like if it's like a 902 number or something like that, and it's like not from like Canada or not from the States or anything like that, I would be like, why am I going to call this number to get insurance when I'm in Ontario, right? So just use those little things just to be like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I'm not going to buy from this person. I'm going to go somewhere where it's reputable. I'm going to ask like a friend or a family member, "Hey, who do you use for insurance?" "Oh, I use Mike." "Okay, I'm going to call Mike." Because again, someone already trusts you, so you're going to go to them. not instead of going to Joe Blow Insurance, where you're like, I have no idea who this is, and I hope they're going to cover me properly, and I hope they're even real. Because again,
yeah,
it doesn't happen very often, but you'd be shocked of how many calls I get like on a yearly basis where they're like, oh, I thought I had insurance, or I pull the reports and I'm like, oh, I thought I had insurance with so-and-so, and it's just not even there. And then you come to find out that that person was like not even a real insurance broker, and they just took their money and left.
Well, and again, there's, think about this too. On the flip side of that, there's you've had a few calls that maybe have been people that have had liability slips from the wrong company or fake, or whatever the case may be. Is those are only the people that have probably been pulled over by the police, right? How many people out there right now
are flying under the radar,
or have stuff that have that, you know, are using possibly fraudulent slips that either are know about or don't, that's not for us to say, every single day, right? That are just basically waiting and don't have a claim, but when it happens, that's when it's going to hit the fan.
Yeah, like I said, flying under the radar, right? Like, what are the statistics between the people that are actually being caught and the people that are still out there like using it, right? Like,
yeah,
we're not catching everyone,
but well, and there's a good talking
point. How many people are out there?
There's a talking point that I wanted to briefly make from my spot, as not a closing thing, but just to wrap up all this together. There's a lot of specific areas in the GTA, unfortunately, that have higher premiums based on the territories they're in. As a result of higher premiums, we're seeing a larger number of people in general that are driving uninsured, right? Going back to what we were just saying, James?
Oh, I follow a lot of like police things, like OPP and that kind of stuff, and they always post. And the amount of people that I see being pulled over with no insurance, suspended insurance, it's like, are you serious? Like, you actually think you can drive a vehicle without being insured? It actually blows my mind how much I see people being pulled over and like fined and convicted of having no insurance or suspended insurance. It is insane.
So this is where I was going to go, though, is that to bring it all full circle, what's happening in general is that people, and again, I'll use the GTA just because of the fact that it happens a lot more there. When you're in an area where you're driving a vehicle, you're a young driver, and you know your price is $500 plus a month, which is not even uncommon to see. There, you get to a position, society, where you say, you know, I can't afford this insurance. I'm going to take my risk and drive because I have to get around, versus even paying for it. So there's a lot of people right now driving uninsured, which again goes back to what we pay for as insurance, right? We're all paying for the uninsured or the underinsured operators in our business.
And that's, yeah. And that's why there is literally a coverage on your insurance for auto insurance. It's called uninsured automobiles, because this is still a problem that we have in our society, that people still think that they can drive not being insured. So again, it hurts
everyone,
yeah,
right?
Because if they hit you, they're not paying into it. You're paying into it, but they aren't. So you have to get your vehicle fixed somehow. It's not going to be from their premiums. So that's why there has to be uninsured automobile coverage on your auto policy, because there are still some people that drive without insurance. And again, like I was saying, I follow on social media a lot of like OPP, Toronto Police, Hamilton Police, all that kind of stuff. And they pull people over all the time. And I'm like, it's shocking that they like will be like, oh, person suspended license, no insurance. And I'm like, how do you, like, I would not have the balls to get into my car not insured and drive down the road. I just wouldn't. I wouldn't even drive to my mailbox, which is like literally like a block away, to pick up my mail uninsured. I would just walk. But there's some people that literally will drive the highways not insured.
There's also a lot of people that don't know, again, the repercussions of that. Whereas me and you work in the industry, and everyone in the industry obviously knows, you know, how massive some of those detriments are.
Oh yeah. They will feel the repercussions after the fact, because driving without insurance, again, stays in your record for 3 years. You're basically going to go to high risk or facility probably at that point. So your premium is not only do you have less options, but now you have way higher premiums. So now, yeah, I wasn't paying for insurance, but now I had to pay for insurance, and it's even higher than what I was prior if I just bought insurance to begin with. So again, right, it's offsetting. If you don't get caught, all to you. If you have the nerve to do that, then great. But if you do get caught, just remember your short-term benefit compared to your long-term risk is way higher on the long-term risk. Because if you get caught, you are so screwed for like at least 3 to 6 years.
Right. Yeah. And to recap all of that, so there's a few things that obviously I wanted to just mention. One of which, guys, remember, fraud does happen, everything from claims to territories to everything we discussed on this episode. So, I mean, the point, there's two points, one of which was we wanted to share with viewers and listeners why it's important to understand that fraud plays a big portion of what we pay for insurance. James, what was that number again? Just to leave everyone off with that number.
$1.6 billion as of 2019. So that number has probably increased since then, because that's already been almost 4 years now.
But right.
Again, like, that is a massive number that the insurance industry has to basically pay for fraudulent claims, anything fraudulent that goes on in insurance.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, we all know, guys, we all know that insurance companies make money. No business no business operates to not make money, especially in our sector. But it is important to know that every individual driver can do their part, whether it's making sure it's accurate or whatnot. And just to bring some knowledge to the fact that, you know, fraud does impact our prices. It's just more for you guys to know why sometimes rates are the way they are, I guess, is the best way to explain that.
Exactly. Because again, this is a huge reason why we pay such a high rate in Ontario, is because how high fraud is. Again, it's not the only reason, but it is a massive reason. If you look at any other province in Canada, their fraud rates are way lower than what it is in Ontario. So of course, Ontario is going to pay a way higher premium than most other provinces. I think the only other province that is relatively the same to Ontario is Alberta. Alberta, I know, has a very, very high insurance rate. And again, I don't live in Alberta, so I can't really speak on that, but I just know from looking at stats is that the average rate in Ontario and Alberta are very, very similar.
So was there anything else that you wanted? I think we're good now until next week.
Yeah, I think that kind of wraps things up. Again, just making sure that you're using your mind, your common sense. If there's red flags on something, maybe just don't do it. And again, maybe ask for a second opinion. Again, if your neighbor, your friend, family uses a broker and you want even just to ask them for a second opinion, just ask them for a second opinion. Maybe going to Joe Blow Insurance that doesn't have a website, that isn't on Google. I can't search them. They have a random address that's like a random house or like a random industrial building. It might not be the best thing for you to place your insurance with them. So again, just use your common sense moving forward. And I think that kind of wraps things up for this week.
Yeah. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. As always, you can find us on most, if not almost all, kind of streaming platforms. We're going to have some more stuff next Wednesday for you as well. And we really appreciate everyone for continuing to kind of follow us along with our sometimes boring, but a very educational journey here.
Yes. I know, like I said, at the beginning of this episode, insurance is not the most exciting topic, but again, if you can leave our conversations every week with more education or more knowledge than you did prior to us talking, then we're doing our jobs proper. That's all we're really here to do. So yeah, this episode will come out. This will be the last episode of November. So this episode will come out on the 29th. And then, yeah, we're looking forward for you guys to check this one out. Episode 12. Again, there are 11 other episodes. So go back, check out some of the other topics that we did talk about. We talked about kind of snowbirds, winterizing, because I know that's a massive topic right now with us going into winter and all the storms that we've been having in Ontario and a little bit of the northern parts of the states. Natural disasters as well. Again, hurricane season down in Florida, still kind of relevant. And again, all the other talks we talked about. So if there's something that interests you, definitely take a listen. And again, like we say every episode, if there's something that we are missing or something that you are interested in hearing, shoot us a message, shoot us an email, whatever it is. We can definitely add it into an episode, or if there is enough topics to that topic, I guess, then we can definitely make a full episode of it. But again, it has to be a very, very generalized topic for us to get a whole episode out of it. So yeah, just shoot us your ideas, shoot us your comments, what you are liking, what you kind of want us to change. Again, we're on this journey together. We're not professional podcasters. So if anything that we can do that can kind of improve this experience for our listeners or for even us, then we would be open to any possibilities. So
yeah, thanks again for everyone for listening, and we will catch you next week.